Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Sunday, May 4th, 2014. This is episode 1080. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/techguy. And by RingCentral. The cloud-based phone system we use just got better with the launch of Meetings, the full-service video conference feature. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral starts at just under $25 per month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial, and when you buy one desk phone, you'll get a second phone free, up to a total of 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about, technology, computers, the internet, smartphones, home theater, digital photography, any of that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo's the number. You'll be speaking to the phone ranger, Heather Hammond, who apparently is going to do her show outside today because you've worn your outside shirt.
It's about thinking.
You're going to use your outside voice or your inside voice?
I'll try to use my inside voice.
Okay. Isn't that funny? When the kids were little, use your outside voice, Henry. I don't even know if the kids know what that means. What do you mean, Mom? I don't have a different voice. Outside, inside. What are you talking about? So, let's talk a little bit about tech. There seems like there's quite a few things to talk about this week. It's been a busy, busy week. I read an article in Think Progress about Janet Vertesi. She's a professor of sociology at Princeton University. And she was thinking, golly, she was about to have a baby. She was pregnant. And she knew that pregnant women are a marketing gold mine. Advertisers and marketers say a woman, the data from a pregnant woman is worth 15 times as much as mine. I guess because she's about to buy a lot of stuff for the next 18 years, right?
Exactly.
They want to get them early. So Vertesi decided she was going to try an experiment, hide her pregnancy from what she calls big data. She read that New York Times article we talked about last year about Target knowing before, a young woman was pregnant before she did, pretty much. I don't know how that happened, but basically based on your buying habits, you collate information from a lot of different places together, you can tell a lot about a person, even then if that information's kind of anonymized, which it is in many cases. Online trackers and widgets and cookies. So Professor Vertesi said, all right, let's see. I'm on Facebook. This is good. She said, but I don't trust Google. She stayed on Facebook, but she said to her friends, she says, I've been on Facebook for 10 years since it opened to Ivy Leaguers because she's at Princeton. She said, I got off Google 2 years ago when they changed their privacy policies, so I don't use any Google products. I was already a conscientious objector to Google, but I'm very active online. I'm going to try not to say anything disparaging. I'm just going to tell you the story. You decide. You be the judge. I'm not fearful of that technology. It was an experimental thing. What would it look to try? And what would it look like to do it without walking away for something like Facebook or Twitter? Okay. So the first thing she did is she said she's on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, but she doesn't trust Google. So the first thing she said is, she's not going to leave Facebook because she says, for me, so much of my colleagues' social interaction happens on Facebook that participating in that virtual interaction is very important. It's a part of my professional ties for my professional community as well as my family. So it made it preferable not to get off of it. She says, I do think to a certain extent you can make decisions about which services you want to be involved in. Of course you can. Nobody makes you use any of these. That seems obvious. So we asked our friends and family to be careful. She said, we're going to tell you, we're very excited, we're going to tell you our good news, but please don't put it online. We're trying an experiment. Please don't put it on Facebook. Okay. She used Tor. Oh, my goodness. This is Tor is a privacy creation, actually, of the, I think it was the U.S. Navy. It was a military creation. The idea of Tor is you send your data anonymized through so many servers that nobody can reasonably figure out who you are. So she would buy her baby stuff on Amazon and, you know, and Target and everywhere, but using Tor so it'd be completely anonymous. We do our research online using Tor, then go out and buy things in cash, in person. For some purchases online we made through Amazon, we set up an Amazon account from a private email account, had it delivered to a local locker in Manhattan so it wasn't associated with our address. We stocked it with Amazon gift cards that we bought with cash. She said this was so much work. I didn't expect it to be as hard as it was. It was extremely impractical and very inconvenient, which revealed to me how convenient everyone has made the process of tracking. So I don't know what her conclusion is. I think she realizes this is not practical, but she learned how hard it was. She said she quit Google when Google knew I was engaged before anyone else did. Okay, this is a really common misapprehension. Google, she says, reads your email, reads your chats. So probably what happened, she sent an email to somebody saying, I'm engaged, and then saw engagement ring ads. But this is kind of an automatically triggered thing. It's not like Google knows anything. They see the key. Anyway, I don't want to argue with her. She did everything she could except get off Facebook to be private. She says, I use DuckDuckGo. It's a great search engine. So I understand people are scared and paranoid, but I also think there's a lot of irrationality around all of this. And the truth is, just don't use the internet. Because what she ignored is that no matter what she's doing, her internet service provider is, of course, the place she's getting online from, sees everything, all the traffic. And, you know, if she doesn't trust Google, but she trusts Facebook, I gotta wonder if she really understands what's going on here at all. Hey, she's a professor at Princeton. Oh, she's an assistant professor. She's an untenured professor at Princeton. What do you at the thinkprogress.org asks her, what do you envision as the future of this big data collection as status quo phenomenon? A bunch of angry citizens storming the Googleplex? A Hunger Gamesy dystopia where corporations and the government know everything about every citizen? We need to think seriously about alternate economic models, she says. I'm not sure what these would be, but okay. The rapid, extraordinarily profitable success of companies that have gone the data collection route makes... See, I think what people probably don't understand is this has been going on forever. And data collection, there's all kinds of data collection. The fact that you buy something or you subscribe to a magazine, all of this is kept in databases. I remember having somebody come in. This was before the internet, many years ago, interviewing somebody who worked for a company that if you give them your zip code, they could, with a great degree of certainty, to say what kind of car you drive, what kind of magazines you subscribe to, because people kind of collect in similar groups, right? And they don't need it to be 100% accurate. But I just, you know, if you mention my question for you today, if you mention a word in an email, it's not like there's a human at Google reading the email. You understand that. Every email service, if they're any good, is already scanning the email for spammy keywords, right, so they can block spam. In that process, they see the word engagement. And the ad that they give you, instead of an ad for tractors, is an ad for engagement rings. Is this great harm? So the degree of effort that's required to prevent them from targeting ads, see, even targeting sounds like a bad word. That's, you know, these are all words that's scary, but the degree of effort she's gone to, and it's extreme and extremely inconvenient, so that she gets an ad for a tractor instead of an engagement ring seems to me extreme. If you are assuming that there are people at these companies who are sitting in a little dark room going, oh, here's more data. More data from Professor Vertesi. We've got it now. We'll know everything. More. It's not like that. I think too many James Bond movies. It's a machine, and it doesn't even really care that you're pregnant or engaged or anything. It just wants to show you an engagement ring or diapers instead of a tractor. That seems like a good thing to me. Maybe you disagree. 8888 Ask Leo. We'll take your calls next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. Our website, techguylabs.com. And the discussion continues there all week long. Comments on every... So the way we do it, we divide... we put the shows up there, first of all. This is show 1080. Now I get it. Jeff Needles is telling me this show should be in 1080p. Get it? Get it? And it's 1080. Now I get it. I just look down and see that now. So this is the 1080. He's kind of a nerd. 1080th show. And they're all up there at techguylabs.com, broken down show by show, but also topic by topic. We make you allow you to search in a variety of different ways. Even question by question. So you can go to a show and then go to hour one and the question one and see that. But you can comment there too. And when I do a monologue like I just did talking about privacy. In fact, I should put this article in the show notes so you can read it directly instead of my paraphrase. You can also comment and let us know what you think of this whole thing. Am I full of it? Should I be worried about Big Brother? I don't think Google's Big Brother. I think the NSA is Big Brother. I don't think Google's the Big Brother. 8888 Ask Leo. Heather Hammond, Big Sister. Your shirt says read outside. Now I'm seeing it. It says read on the sleeve, outside, and then what's the other sleeve say? Think?
The box. Oh, read.
Read outside the box.
I don't know. I kind of felt like wearing it because of our discussion.
Is that from the American Library Association?
Show.
What did we talk about?
Read, view content outside the typical mainstream box.
Got it.
Like have so much intelligent stuff to share with people.
But nobody ever listens to me.
No, they are.
I have... No one's listening. So, Heather, who should... I see a wonderful lineup of callers to speak with. You... wield the mighty sword that you can tap somebody on the shoulder with and knight them. Who shall we knight first?
Let's knight Neil in Phoenix.
Sir Neil of Phoenix. Welcome to the show, my friend. Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. Listen, I'm following up on... Actually, I listened to your show yesterday, as I enjoy, and I wanted to follow up with something you actually mentioned yesterday, which is kind of interesting to me. I have a nice big desktop that I built a couple of years ago, but, you know, I found that my needs are probably simpler than I may have thought at the time.
That's what we were talking about yesterday. These computers are so complicated. It's like saying, well, I would like to listen to a song and buying your own symphony orchestra.
Right. Well, I have the computer. However, I realize I know how to use the computer, but the point is I have an iPad. And I'm thinking, you said maybe that's a suitable replacement for a computer, laptop, whatever the case may be.
It does depend on what you do, obviously. I mean, if you're a novelist, I don't think an iPad's a good choice. It's more for content consumption, a little light email, some browsing, that kind of thing. But that's how most people use computers.
Right.
Well, maybe not you. What do you do? Yeah. What do you do on your computer?
Well, I surf the web. I check email. I can write some documents. You know, I did buy a Logitech keyboard, which is very nice. That actually does a very good job as far as typing. I put Office on there. As a matter of fact, I have a 365 subscription.
Yeah, that just came out. So now you've got Word. You've got Excel. You've got PowerPoint. You've got a keyboard. You've made it into a laptop, this iPad into a laptop, kind of.
In a manner of speaking, right. And it seems to do pretty well. The only thing it might lack, maybe, is enough external storage. It's 16 gigabytes, and you have to figure where you put all of your data that otherwise be on your desktop machine.
Well, they do make... Okay, so there's two answers to that question. They do, of course, make bigger iPads. You have the tiniest one. But I do remember when PCs came out with 2 gigabyte hard drives, and we thought, whoa, we'll never fill that up. What changed is we started putting video and audio, larger files, bigger files on our drives. Your Word document, you could put a lot of Word documents in 16 gigabytes. I don't think you'd ever fill it up. But rich media starts to fill it up. So answer one is get a bigger iPad. They go up to 128 gigs now. Answer two is that in general, data usage has changed considerably. And this is one thing that I think we don't move as fast in our minds as technology does. And I think people still kind of say, well, I've got to get the 64 gig smartphone because I need to store data on it, or I need to buy an SD card for it with 128 gigs because I need to store all this data on it. And really, we store most of our data nowadays, most of us anyway, and I would recommend it with any mobile device, whether it's a tablet or a phone, in the cloud, up in the on the internet where you can access it any time. So that's why even if you're using Office, you might use the Office 365 in the cloud, store your and that's how it works, by the way, on an iPad, just store your documents in the cloud. You can maybe store the current document locally if you're going to go on an airplane. Email is already, for most people, in the cloud, whether it's Yahoo, Google, AOL. It's all up there. It's not down. You know, you don't have to download it. You look at it, a view of it. In fact, that's the first, for most of us, that's the first time we even experienced this idea of the cloud, of having our data on a server somewhere else, was our email. Early email, remember, you would download it and it would delete it off the server. That's because bandwidth was so scant and the storage was expensive. And so the preference of internet service providers and most users was, okay, I'm going to run my email client and it's going to download all the email, delete it off the server. Now I have it here on my computer. But that's changed, hasn't it? Don't we now use Gmail or Yahoo Mail or Outlook or whatever? And our mail is kind of there, not here. And that way we can see it no matter what device. You know, partly what changed is we have multiple devices. We have work, we have home. We have mobile. And so people want to have their data on all of it. And the easiest way to do that is not store it locally on any one of those devices, but in the cloud. So our documents are in the cloud. Our email's in the cloud. Now, with iOS, certainly, and Android, you can store your photos as you take a picture. Every time I take a picture of my phone or my tablet, it's immediately uploaded not to one or two, but to three different places. It uploads to SkyDrive or OneDrive at Microsoft's cloud storage, Dropbox, and Google Plus, the Google. So I'm never going to lose a photo, right? Because it's uploaded to three different places, and I can see it and share it, and if I want, edit it, all of that stuff. Music, same thing. Depending on the service you use, if you use Spotify or Pandora, you never download it; you just stream it. I like Google's music. Amazon has a similar service. Where if you pin it, you say, okay, I'm going to get on an airplane. So I'm going to pin, these five hot new albums so I have them and I can listen on the airplane when I'm not online. I think increasingly we don't need to store so much. In fact, you might have plenty of storage on a 16 gig iPad or a 16 gigabyte phone. First of all, 16 gigabytes, that's a lot of data. A byte is one letter. Average word is about 6 bytes. So a 2,000-word document is 12 kilobytes. Well, how does that relate to 16 gigabytes of storage? Well, there are 1,000 kilobytes. You remember, 12 kilobytes for this 2,000-word document. There are 1,000 kilobytes in a megabyte and 1,000 megabytes in a gigabyte. So you have 16 million bytes of storage, kilobytes of storage. In other words, you can have a million 2,000 word documents and you won't run out of room. That seems like plenty. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Our show today brought to you by my good buddy, Bill Harris. He was a guest on one of our shows on triangulation. Was that guy, I think, a couple of years ago now? I should look it up. Former CEO of Intuit and PayPal, and he knew a little bit about the idea of finance and about money. We had a great conversation. He said, well, Leo, you should try this thing we've just started up called Personal Capital. And so I signed up, and I love it. So the idea is, keeping track of what you've got is not easy. Every credit card, every bank account, your mortgage, your investments, they're all on different websites with different passwords, and you... It's kind of like, well, how do I see it all in one place? You can't unless you use Personal Capital. You log into Personal Capital there, or you can, or they have tablet and smartphone apps, and there you see your whole your financial life laid out in real time graphs. You can see exactly where you stand, where you're going. You can make intelligent decisions, and importantly, you can see where you're overspending on fees for investment advice, or overspending on what do they call it? Commissions on purchasing stocks, things like that. So it will show you how much you're overpaying, how you can reduce those fees. You can get tailored advice, optimizing your investments. Why wait? It takes just a minute and it'll pay big dividends. I want you to visit personalcapital.com/triangulation/tech guy. I don't even know what show I'm on. Personalcapital.com. He was on Triangulation. This is the Tech Guy Show. Personalcapital.com/tech guy. One word. And check it out. Oh, did I mention? It's free. So there's no reason not to do it. You will be glad you did. Plan for your future. PersonalCapital.com/tech guy. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, the Tech Guy Show. Answering your calls, taking your questions. 8888 Ask Leo. Jeff, Sun Valley, California. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Leo. This is a question from the land that time forgot. I have a couple of...
Do you have dinosaurs where you live?
Well, you could just call me T-Rex.
Is Raquel Welch wearing a fur skin prancing around? I love that place.
I love that poster.
I do too, yes.
I have a couple of XP machines, and with Microsoft no longer supporting, I wonder if they're still going to support the part where it will re-authenticate your software.
Yeah, that's a good question. No, they haven't turned that off yet.
Okay. Do you think they might?
No. Gosh, they can't do that. Then that would basically make it stop working.
Right.
And that would
be
mean.
Right. Well, I just wondered if I...
I think they'd face a class action lawsuit. I think they can reasonably say after 13 years, look, don't expect more patches. Although they broke their word. You saw that this week. They patched Internet Explorer. They blinked, some said. Because they said, no, under no circumstances are we all right, we'll patch it. Reason is there was a serious zero-day flaw. It would probably... How many machines? Three?
I have a couple of XP machines. My most current machine is Windows 7, I think.
Oh, good.
My favorite machine is Windows 2000 Professional.
Years I said Windows 2000 was the best version of Windows ever. Windows 7 came, because it was much, much more recent, took the crown. And I think currently Windows 7 is probably the best version of Windows 7. Although, there's a lot to be said for Windows 8. I don't like the user interface. I don't like what Microsoft did with it. I think that that's abusive. They're abusing our relationship. On the other hand, they did fix some things, many things, that weren't working so well in 7. So,
do you know if I can still use my legacy software? I've written a lot of things in Visual Basic and... That'll all still work.
Anything in VB should still be supported, because the key for that is the DLLs,
right?
And those DLLs should work just fine on Windows 8. I don't know for a fact. I would check, but that's the stuff that's going to still work. The stuff that doesn't work is stuff that's poorly written in not in a Microsoft language, but in a by somebody. Usually, it's vertical software that
third party,
and often it's software that says, what version of the operating system are you? And if you don't say XP, it goes, oh, you need XP. stupid stuff like that. The funny thing is, Windows 7 probably would work better on even an XP machine. The only issue is the amount of RAM you have. Because a lot of those older XP machines had 512 megs .
Yeah, I boosted mine to 3 gig, and it's probably way more than it.
3 gigs, plenty. In fact, 3 gig is, a 32-bit version of Windows 7 can't see more than 4. So 3 gig's plenty.
I have a first corollary to your thing that everybody is saving everything and too much storage.
Yeah.
And that is the Internet trying to pump too much stuff down the line. Yeah. And there's a lot of websites that could just use HTML.
I know.
Nice and fast, but they want to do the Flash and all the bells.
We got fat and happy because, and this is a age-old story in technology. As processors got faster, memory got cheaper, storage got cheaper, programmers got, I got plenty of space. I got plenty of bandwidth. I got plenty. And they get sloppy and they don't care so much. And now you've got giant. I mean, the size of sites today, we would be shocked at 10 years ago. We'd say, well, that's, you know, you can get that down to 1/10 the size. But nobody cares because everybody's on broadband. And it's like, well, whatever. Who cares if that image is a megabyte? I see sites with megabyte images. And you're right about Flash. Flash is a pig. It is fortunately being phased out.
I just hope some programmers out there will start economizing on the scale of what they're trying to turn down.
There are a few people, but they're almost all old-timers, people like Steve Wozniak and my friend Steve Gibson, who cherish the notion of let's make this as tight and as lean as we possibly can. Most programmers don't have the time or the luxury to do that. They just got to get the job out. And it's too bad. In fact, there's a whole sermon I could give about software development, but I don't. It's probably not for today. It may be maybe more for the programmers out there than the regular people. I don't want normal people to know what a rat's nest of the software they use is. How horrible it is.
Everything goes to Google APIs.
Yeah,
and
it's just broken. It's broken. And if you knew, you know, you don't want to see the sausage being made. You really don't want to see the software being made. If you knew the pig lips and the snake guts and the chicken wire and the baling wire that's gone in almost all modern software, you would just say, well, how does that even work? The Defense Department for a while really wanted to, if you're the Defense Department, you want to make sure those rockets go where you're aiming. They really made a concerted effort to make their software reliable. They actually invented a new language that was really strict, called ADA, and no one uses it. Even the Defense Department, I don't think, uses it anymore because it was too strict. People said, "Hey, this project will never get done. You want the software? You want it to be correct? You get a choice." And so, I think we're just going to have to live with the way it is. It is too bad. I think a lot of the websites are just sloppy. It's sloppy. It's lazy. It's get it out the door quickly. And I'm probably just as guilty of it as anybody else, frankly. I haven't looked at my website lately. It's probably a little overblown. Because, it's actually a larger philosophical conversation. When resources are ample, people don't work as hard.
There's some people like me that just, I can't get a high-speed connection. I'm using a hotspot through a cell phone, and it's spotty. And if I go to YouTube, stop two or three times for 20 seconds while it buffers. And
That's interesting.
Forget streaming, anything, really. But your site loads quite quick, and I'm very pleased with it. So
you saw it. I don't know if you saw what happened at LAX.
I did not.
This is an interesting example of what I was talking about. This is from NBC News. A relic from the Cold War appears to have triggered a software glitch at the Air Traffic Control Center at LAX. Wednesday about 2 p.m., a U-2 spy plane. Remember that? Gary Powers getting shot down over Russia? The same kind of aircraft that flew high-altitude spy missions over Russia 50 years ago passed through the airspace monitored by the Los Angeles Air Route Traffic Control Center. That's in Palmdale. That handles landing and departures at LAX, San Diego, and in Las Vegas. That's a pretty big center. The computers at the center are programmed to keep commercial airliners and other aircraft from colliding with each other. Now, the U-2, as all these spy planes do, was flying very high, 60,000 feet. Although the exact technical causes are unknown, the spy plane's altitude and route overloaded the computer system. The programmers never thought they'd see a plane flying at 60,000 feet. And then, so it goes down. It's the ERAM, which generates display data on, those big screens the air traffic controllers are looking at. Then the backup computers failed. They had to shut down LA Center. It caused a nationwide ground stop that lasted for an hour and affected thousands of passengers. And this is because of poor computer programming. Perfect example. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. May the 4th be with you. Leo Laporte on Star Wars Day. 88 88 Ask Leo is the phone number. I'm watching. This is NASA made a movie for May the 4th. R2-D2 going off in space. There he goes.
Hello, Star Wars fans.
Hello, Star Wars fans. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the number. You saw it. Did you see the new the cast for the new Star Wars? I guess they're making... J.J. Abrams is making the new Star Wars. Disney bought the Lucas franchise. And there's a picture going around of J.J. meeting with the cast of the new Star Wars movie. And that's kind of cool. The whole old cast, oh, Alex Guinness has passed away, but the rest of the original cast is there. A little older. It's going to be Star Wars Episode 7. Not only is the script done, but they've apparently had started having readings. They're starting to work on it.
Any big names?
Yeah, well, no, probably not somebody you would know. I mean, you might know because you're hip and you're with it. no, you know, no big names.
I think Ryan Gosling should be.
The guy, Adam Driver, do you know who that is?
No.
Yeah, see, it's like that.
I'll be Princess Leia. Ryan Gosling.
They've got Princess Leia. They've got Mark Hamill. They've got Carrie Fisher. They've got Indiana Jones. I'm sorry, Harrison Ford. He looks like Indiana Jones. So they've got the original cast sitting. It's a great picture. There's a black and white picture. At first I saw it, and R2-D2 is in a crate. And at first I saw it, and I thought, oh, this must be the original. What? Because it's black and white. It kind of has that vintage feeling. There's no cell phones. And then I looked a little closer. I said, wait a minute, Indiana Jones, a little older. Wait a minute. This is a current photo. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting, I think. I think Adam Driver is a villain. I'm not sure, but I think so. You might recognize him as the telegraph operator in Steven Spielberg's Lincoln. No, that doesn't ring a bell. do you ever see the HBO show Girls?
Yeah.
He's her boyfriend.
Oh, that
the
guy.
Tall, weird-looking guy.
Yes. Yeah. He's so weird. He's kind of handsome. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's up to you. He doesn't look handsome to me, but he's interesting. He's
quirky.
A kind of a carrot quirky.
Yeah.
He's like Benedict Cumberbatch without the name.
Thank you.
Yes.
He did some Gap ads as well.
Probably. He's very hot right now, and it just encourages me. If I were only 40 years younger, I might have a shot at stardom.
To pursue a career in
I
acting.
Could pursue, hey, if Adam Driver, but I love Adam Driver. He's a great actor. He's quirky. He's got a guy today. You know, he's just an odd person. Let me click the link. The chat room just gave me the link. We'll put it in the show notes if you want to see the script reading of the original of the new cast with some of the original cast members. You could see J.J. Abrams talking to Harrison Ford. Oh. There's R2-D2 in a box. Why do I show pictures on the radio?
Yeah.
Imagine, if you will. You know, here's the big name. There is one. Max von Sydow.
Oh.
There he is talking to Mark Hamill. You see the back of Mr. Sydow's head. They're both wearing lumberjack shirts. That's how you can find them quickly. But you know, I found interesting in this picture, and the reason it fooled me, I didn't see any cell phones. I didn't see any laptop computers. It could be 1977. I mean, it feels very, you know, in a normal group of maybe 20 people sitting around talking, at least two of them would be looking at their phone.
Exactly. No one is. I had the exact same thought. So it really is timeless.
Well, I think what happened is probably they said, look, this is our first reading of Episode 7. You may not bring a phone in here. You may not bring a computer. I don't want you tweeting.
Huh.
Everybody tweets now, you know.
But even the styles or something, there's just something that's not...
It feels vintage.
Discernible immediately.
Feels vintage. So, I'm excited about that. You know, there's Adam Driver. Maybe you'll recognize
him.
Yeah,
for sure.
If you look at him closely, he's sitting next to some guy.
Mm-hmm. The shoes, the jeans, there's nothing.
He's a hipster. He's a hipster.
Oh, who's on his right or his left?
I don't know. It looks familiar.
Looks like, what's his face?
Could be. Could be what's his
the
face.
The German guy. Christoph Waltz.
No, I don't think that's Waltz.
Oh,
that would be.
Amazing.
He should be in Star Wars.
He should. He'd be a good villain.
Yeah,
okay.
He could be Khan. Wait a minute. No, that's the wrong. Wrong story cycle. Back to the phones we go. Mark Hamill in Santa Ana. No, Mark in Santa Ana. Hi, Mark.
Officially Jedi Master Spaz. Yep, in the 90s. They actually, Lucas allowed you to do that, you know, register your own name.
And you did?
So I did, Jedi Master Spaz, yeah.
And was that, what was that in? Was that as, was there a...
The Lucas website.
Oh, that's cool.
The Star Wars website, yeah.
Cool.
So, anyhow...
You sure it wasn't Jedi Master Spaz 763?
No.
No?
No, I was one of the first.
1138?
So. I, when Star Wars came back out in 1997,
yeah.
When the credits started rolling, I cried, took off of work... Started yeah. rolling. I cried. I thought, I'm over. You know, I'm maybe over it a bit. I look over at my wife. No. She's crying, too.
Yeah. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. You know, that it's hard to believe that 1997 was the 20th anniversary.
Yep.
So, and that was almost 20 years ago. So, I think in 3 years, it's the 40th anniversary of the first Star Wars movie. Holy cow. A New Hope.
Yep.
Holy cow.
By the way, the whole thing you've been talking about the government and the cable companies and DSL companies and Google.
Yeah.
Yeah, if Google was a separatist and all the other companies and the government was the old republic.
Google's the rebel alliance.
No, because if Google is the separatist, you got one guy running it all, and he basically has the government and the regular companies screw it up. Google comes in with their Google Fiber.
Here we are.
Happening,
Here we are.
And then they take over.
I wish that were... Well, see, I... you know, it's the only... Okay, I like Google. I have a thing for Google. I love the services I get from Google. I'm very heavily invested into their services. I understand that Google collects data about me and uses it to target ads. That's what they do. The only time that you can make anything bad out of this is you have to invent scenarios like, well, suddenly Google gets run by an evil, you know, genius, or suddenly the government takes all the data from Google and starts using it against us. And
you know, I'm just saying Google's trying to, you know,
I think Google's trying to make it. Yes, that's what I think.
Anyhow, just thought you'd find that amusing.
I agree with you.
Yep.
To overextend a Star Wars metaphor.
Yep. It's only because it's May the 4th.
You know what made me cry? Jar Jar Binks. That made me cry.
No, this is great. J.J. Abrams killed Vulcan, so he can kill Jar Jar Binks.
Do you think, you know, he did with the Star Trek, and this is controversial, a complete reboot. He just reinvented the universe and said, we're going to start over. I don't think he can do that with Star Wars. I think he has to.
Well, at least he can with Jar Jar Binks. There are people who probably don't even care about the movie who would go in and
just watch
5 minutes,
Jar Jar
die and leave. just to get rid of Jar.
Burke McQuinn is running here cheering, yes, kill Jar Jar.
Yep. Anyhow, Carbonite. I transferred a Carbonite subscription, just a personal subscription from the PC to the Mac.
Yeah.
And Carbonite says that you cannot automatically say back up the videos. You have to do it one at a time.
That's right. And there's a good reason for that. When you're backing up, I'm not trying to justify it from their point of view or you know, they are a sponsor. I guess I should give you the disclaimer. But I understand their thinking here. When you're backing up to the internet, you are bound by your upstream bandwidth, not your downstream. So, you know, you might have 20 megabits down and a megabit up or whatever. So you can only use that megabit up, and you can't use all of it or it would literally cut off your internet access. They have to use half of it. So they can't upload very fast. I mean, it's just the nature of these things. Now, it's certainly fast enough for that 2,000-word 12K document, but what happens with video is it's big. And if you just if you turned it on by default, if you allowed people to turn it on, and people would... They wouldn't do the math in their head. They wouldn't realize that what was a week backup, let's say, or a 2 week backup, is suddenly a 3 or 4 month backup, and that really is undoable. So before you turn on your videos, do some math, figure out how much data you want to back up, take your upstream bandwidth, realistic, cut it in half because it can't use all of it or it'd cut you off, and see how long it would take to upload the stuff you're trying to upload.
Right. It's not big movies. It's little, you know, shorts, as you say, 6 second shorts.
Well, but that's right. And so those are small, but a lot of people would be uploading gigabyte
files.
Right, but
it does it on the PC side. That's what was so frustrating.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, you can't. I mean, the truth, you can back up anything. You just have to go in and check everything.
But that's thousands of directories.
Yeah. Why do you have thousands of directories full of 6 second videos?
10 years worth of picture uploads from an iPhone.
In general, what I recommend is that you take the rich media and you back it up on a drive and take it to work. It's much more efficient. Use Carbonite for the document files. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet, home theater, smartphones, and all that jazz. 8888. Ask Leo is the phone number. Chris Marquardt, our digital photographer, is off for a few weeks. He's, where is it? Where did he say he was going? He's going like to the Himalayas, right? He's going up. Heather, I hope that's what you were signaling with that finger. It was
oh, yeah,
he's going
up.
Yeah. Heather Hammond, the phone ranger, taking your calls. Our website is techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Let's go back to the phones. And Thomas is in Zurich, is it as in Switzerland, Thomas?
That is correct, sir.
Great to talk to you. Thanks for listening in Switzerland.
Not a problem.
What can I do for you?
My Skype has been acting up lately. You know, there is the little inset window that controls the outgoing video.
Yep.
It starts with a 4:3 aspect ratio, and then after a random amount of time, it changes to about 16:9.
Yeah.
And then the audio starts to lag, or the video starts to lag behind the video, and that is very annoying.
Skype, remember, Skype was sold to Microsoft. And I don't know if it's Microsoft's fault, because they've kind of kept it as a separate division, but it's gone straight downhill ever since. And it might even be before the sale that this particular thing started happening. I don't know if you know, but we use Skype all the time on my podcast network. Many of our guests are not local in studio with us. They're on Skype. In fact, even on this radio show, almost all our contributors use Skype. So I have a lot of experience with the ins and outs, the ups and downs of Skype. One of the things it will do is it will change your aspect ratio automatically. If it thinks you have enough bandwidth. But as you can see, it's making a mistake. So it's switching the 4:3, which is a lower resolution, fewer dots, they send until they think you have enough bandwidth to support the widescreen.
I like 4:3.
I prefer it too. If it thinks you have enough bandwidth, it switches to widescreen. And then, first of all, in that switch, there's a dropout because it takes a second for it to switch. And then... Yeah, and you notice this. It's now using a lot of bandwidth on video, and all of a sudden the audio degrades. Have we figured out a way to prevent that, Burke? No. We have no... we do all sorts of things. We try different versions of Skype. Sometimes we won't upgrade. In fact, most of the time we won't upgrade until we know what new abominations Microsoft has, has put into Skype. So it really is... every time you get a new Skype, it's an adventure. Skype has, and you may have or may not have noticed this, but Skype now has this thing where it will zoom in. I don't know if that's the cameras we're using or Skype. I think it's Skype, where it will decide, no, I want to make his head bigger. And it'll zoom in on you.
I noticed that, yes.
Are you using a Mac or a PC?
I use a Mac, and it actually only started to happen after I upgraded from 10.5 to 10.7.
Yeah. So there is a program, I think it's free in the App Store. It's called Webcam Settings.
Okay.
Say again? $8. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. It ain't free, but it's worth it. We put it on all of our Macs. I'm sorry. $8. That's a little pricey. It will give you on... Now, what camera do you use? A Logitech or do you use a built-in camera?
I use the built-in camera.
Yeah. I think you already have settings for the built-in camera. We use webcam settings because it works with cameras that are not provided with Mac drivers. But the built-in camera, I think Apple gives you some control of.
Actually, they don't.
They don't. Well, try webcam settings. This is the whole idea of this. In fact, look at it on the App Store and read the description before you buy it. I wish they gave you a way to try it before you buy. But the whole idea is you need better control. Now, I don't think it will let you turn off this... aspect ratio change. We have not yet figured out a way to do that. I think maybe, I don't, can you turn up the bandwidth used by audio and to deprecate video? Yeah, see, they don't give you many settings. We're very interested because Skype acquired a company called Cat and Mouse, and they're going to start sending us a special version of Skype for broadcasters that lets us flip switches like that. Like, don't do that. And that, I think they should release that to, in the public, because that we all need better control of Skype. Meanwhile, you're just kind of stuck with it.
Okay, apparently.
Yeah. Let's see. There may be a chat room is giving me a link to software that forces 16:9, but that's not what you want. You want to keep it at 4:3.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is from a company called NodeWave. It's for Windows anyway. NodeWave.com. Force Skype to use high def. But see, I don't think you want to force that, because it uses more bandwidth for the video, and it's going to degrade your audio. You're using Skype right now?
Yeah, I do. No, yeah. I'm on my phone, but I'm using Skype.
I love Skype. Yeah.
Me too. Is there any alternative program that you could recommend?
Webcam settings, the only one on the Mac. This one from NodeWave, if you had a Windows machine, does look like you can say, no, I want 800x600. I don't want HD. So it does look like you could switch back and forth. You can even set the aspect ratio. This is good. If this program can do it on Windows, I have to presume that it's possible to do on the Mac, and just nobody has written it yet.
Okay.
Maybe the webcam settings guys will. This is free. If you had a Windows machine, I'll ask our somebody in the chat room to try it. I think what we're going to end up doing is finding an alternative to Skype, or encouraging Skype to change. Another thing suggested by our engineering staff is if you buy your own webcam, you don't use the built-in webcam, you might have better control over what's going on.
Yeah, which I complained to Skype that they never got back to me.
No, because there's nobody home. They're all face chatting, FaceTiming. I don't know. I have no idea. It is a great free service. I love it. And if you if you call long distance a lot, if you're in Zurich and you like to call the States, there's no more affordable way to do it.
That's why I'm using it.
Yep. Yep. So webcam settings does work with the internal camera. So that's the first thing. $8, that's the first thing I do. I try that. And then we've been trying a number of different cameras. There is a very expensive new camera from Cisco. They actually bought a company called Foscam, and they sell a camera called the Precision HD. It's a teleconferencing camera. And this actually does a great job of keeping it. It's a 4:3, I think, only. Now, they say it's HD, but we found that it really does a good job of making the image. It doesn't zoom. It's a little less wide angle. This is a great camera, but it's almost $300, so I'm not going to recommend you buy that. I will put a link to it, though, and we'll make that our product of the week so people can at least take a look at it. The Cisco Precision HD teleconferencing camera. It's a Foscam that they bought. Wish I had better advice for you. I'm so glad you're listening in Zurich. That's great.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay, Thomas, have a great day. Take care. 8888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. It's come a little closer to home. Diane's in Chicago. Hi, Diane.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
Wonderful. This is your friend calling back who loved the Note 3 like
me. I love you, Diane. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. You were one of my favorite calls of the year.
Okay. Well, anyway.
you said that you loved it. You loved your Note 3 like a man.
That's right. Like a man.
Like a man. And that's become my catchphrase.
Okay.
So what can I do for you now, Diane?
Okay. Anyway, AT&T pushed through the KitKat update, and now
It's time for a DIVORCE.
Okay.
Because that is no good. Yeah, really? They pushed it through. Well, tell me what problems you're having. I can kind of predict.
Okay. Now all of my network Wi-Fi passwords are gone. And I had many for the beauty salon, for friends, for relatives. Is there any way to get those passwords?
What? It forgot them all?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Go in your settings and look. There's a setting under backup and restore where you check a box that says, let Google backup and restore my Wi-Fi passwords. Make sure that's checked. Maybe it'll restore them back to you. Otherwise, no, you're going to re-enter them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. If you're running a small business, you can't operate at anything.
No, you can't. No, you can't. That's why we have Ring Central,
our phone system here in the Brickhouse Studios at the Tech Guy Labs. Ring Central is a cloud-based phone system. And I like that because I really didn't when we set this up. Well, first of all, the trials and tribulations of a small business owner. The last thing you really think about is, oh, I'm going to need a phone system, right? You know you need desks. Well, I got to have walls. There's things you got to do. But everybody was using the cell phone in the old building, and their own personal phones. I thought, well, why do I need a phone on the desk? It seems so, industrial era company. Well, no, you do. In fact, fire laws require it. I found out. So we got RingCentral. Now, this is nice because it's all the advantages of the modern world, the cloud-based system, with none of the disadvantages of that big old PBX in the basement and got to be maintained. Oh, I love it. RingCentral, very affordable too, by the way. Starts at $24.99 a month per user. It works on their cell phones as well as desks. So every desk has an actual phone on it, a RingCentral phone on it. It's very easy to configure, by the way. You just plug it in and it works because it's all done in the cloud. You can get online and modify things, set up a directory, set up forwarding. Each individual user has access to forwarding. So, for instance, my desk phone at the office also rings my cell phone and my phone at home, one after the other. You could set that up, how many rings. You got a company directory that I'm on it, the auto receptionist. It'll greet the callers, announces employees and department extensions. It's just really a nice system. Because it's the cloud, they can improve it. They can update it. They can make it better because there's nobody has to come over and say, well, I've got to install a new module into the PBX. No, it's all in the cloud. For instance, they just added meetings. I love this. You can now, with RingCentral, host face-to-face meetings in high definition, share the desktops or documents with anyone, anytime, on any device. They don't even have to be a RingCentral customer. Meetings just makes RingCentral even better, really the best business solution on the market today. I want you to try it. Visit ringcentral.com, browse around, get a sense of what they can do. We've got an all-inclusive pricing, $25 per user, and a 30-day risk-free trial waiting for you. Plus, when you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. Don't tell anybody else about that. This is for you, my listeners. We've got a special number for you, too, 800-543-9980, 800-543-9980. Or visit ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT, T-W-I-T. RingCentral.com, promo code TWIT, or call 800-543-9980. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888, ask Leo, 888-827-5536. Diane, you're still on hold, Diane?
Yes, I am, Leo.
I don't want to give you up. I love you so much. I just want to keep you on the show. You could be my new sidekick.
I love you, too. Sincerely, you're the best ever.
Oh, you keep saying that now. try that restore thing, that checkbox that says restore. See if that does. Because otherwise, you're just going to have to ask at the beauty parlor and everywhere. You can say, I forgot. What's your Wi-Fi password again?
Yeah, and I don't want to go through that. I have one quick question.
Sure.
I have a Win 7, 1 terabyte, 8 gigs of memory. And yes. It said it was filled to 917 gigabytes.
Uh-oh.
I only had about 35 Word docs, 500 photos, and 600 MP3s.
That shouldn't fill up that much. You should have plenty of room left. 917 right. Gigs. I wonder.
Do you think I was attacked by hard bleed?
No. No, you're safe on that. First of all, no, A, no. B, no. And C, no. No way. So you're okay on that. I think there's something on your drive, though, but I'm going to give you a program you can download that will tell you what's using up all that space on your hard drive. Do you have a D drive?
No. Yes, because it's a Lenovo, and the system is on the D drive.
Right. So there's a couple of programs you can use. One's called Space Sniffer.
Okay.
And it's free, and it will let you look at your drives and give you a picture, what they call a map, visualization of what space is used by what kind of files and all of that. It's from Udere. It's an Italian company, but it's free. UDERZO.IT. Space Sniffer, and I like them because their mascot is a wiener dog wearing a Mountie hat. I don't know why. Maybe that's a Sherlock Holmes hat. I guess it's a Sherlock. It's a wiener dog wearing a Sherlock Holmes hat. So that's a good one, and that's free. There are others that do the same thing. The idea is if you could look at what was using up space on your drive, you could see if there's something just ballooning it up. Because that's way for what you described, that's way too much space. Another one that we've often recommended, it's very popular, is called Winderstat, W-I-N-D-I-R, stat.
Yes.
And both of these will give you pictures, and you can go, oh, I see. Ah. Because something is using up space that shouldn't be using up space.
Right.
And it's, you know, what you described, it's, do they have videos on there? Or
No videos.
Oh, I bet you have backups on there. On your Lenovo, there's an automated backup thing. I bet it's making backups. That's what's going on. So look in the Lenovo backup program. And if it is making backups, you want it to delete the old backups.
Okay.
Sometimes it'll make backups and it won't delete the old ones. So as you use the computer, the drive gets fuller and fuller. You have plenty, a terabyte drive, you have plenty of space.
Right. Okay, then. Thank you so much.
Oh, Diane, really a pleasure. Call again soon, okay?
Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. What a doll. I just love her. KitKat is a big upgrade. It's a great upgrade, but it does change your phone a little bit. Should not erase settings. That may have been more of an install than anything else. So it should not have erased settings. And we're going to, I'll tell you what, on the show notes, because the chat room's coming up with a lot of suggestions for drive scanning programs that give you an idea of what's using up space. So we'll put all of those in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Let's see here. Lakewood, California. It's Jim on the line. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Leo. It's Lakewood, Colorado. Thank you for...
Yeah, I thought so. I saw the CA, but I thought that should be CO.
Okay.
Yeah. Welcome.
Okay. First of all, would you like a audio book recommendation?
I would. You know I love audiobooks.
Yes, I do too. There's one that kind of relates to the show by Robin Cook. He made a lot of books like Coma and that, but this one's called Cell.
Robin Cook's Cell.
It's
a thriller, biological thriller, I'm guessing.
Yes. And
I loved Coma. That was a great book and a great movie, so I'll have to check it out.
One of the apps in it is called iDoc, so you can imagine what goes on there.
He's obviously a sophisticated guy there.
Yeah. In fact, he's had three movies made by his books, so I would look that this is a possibility.
Oh, yeah. There's some writers, and Robin Cook's one of them, that write beautiful visual prose that makes you just see a movie as you're listening to it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, my question is, I've had a problem with Office 365, and I purchased it a couple of months ago, and I really liked it at first. I got three computers that it's running on. And
so you got the subscription that gives you five installs, it sounds like.
Yes.
Yeah, and I have that one too.
Installs.
Yep.
And the other day on my wife's PC, Windows 7, it came up and said, unlicensed.
Oh, yeah. She has to be logged in with your Outlook account or your Microsoft account.
Yes, and I had the password and all that, and so, you know, it had been working good on her computer, and just all of a sudden it come up with this unlicensed and red
on it. You know, this is why I hate copy protection.
And yes.
It goes, you know, Bill Gates was always paranoid. Back to the earliest days when he used to go to user group meetings and yell at people for stealing the paper tapes of his basic programming language. He would be furious. You guys are a bunch of thieves. Yeah. And he never got over it. And so Windows now has not one, not two, but three different anti-piracy technologies in it. And they're doing the same with Office. You know, it's their right to do that. But I wouldn't have a problem with it, except it breaks so much.
So this is clearly broken. You might try logging out of your Microsoft account on that Office 365 install, or just uninstalling it and doing it over again. It will not delete any of the data. Don't worry about that.
Yes, I did both of those many times.
And nothing.
I called customer support.
What'd they say?
They said the same thing, log out and log back in. And I tried that again while I was online with them, and that didn't work.
Did you do what I told you to do, which maybe I'm sorry I did? Did you change it so she's running as a limited user?
Yes, and I think that's
Bingo.
The problem.
Bingo. Okay, I'll solve this for you right now. Listen, I'll solve this for you right now. The first time you run this, you need to run as administrator. So right-click the icon for Word or Excel or PowerPoint, whatever you're using, and select from the pop-up menu, Run as Administrator. You'll have to enter the administrator password. And then it will go, and the problem is it logs in, but it can't save that information.
Uh-huh.
So unfortunately, there are disadvantages to running safely. And again, it's Microsoft's fault. I'm going to shake my imaginary fist at them because it's the right way to run Windows is not to run it as administrator. That's just dangerous. But a lot of programs just they act funny. And this is an example. But it should. If you log in, you click run as administrator. You select that. You make sure it's logged in. It should remember it from then on. If it doesn't, then you need to always run an administrator. And what you can do is create an icon that will automatically run as administrator for those programs. This is why people don't run as a limited user. It's inconvenient, and yet it's so much safer. You did it for your wife to protect her. So just run as administrator, log in. You should be okay. Leo Laporte, thanks, Uncle Bick, for the tip in the chat room. I am the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. That's the phone number. We were talking to Jim in Lakewood, Colorado, about Office and activation. And I really want to underscore, it is always better to run as a limited user or a standard user, depending on the version of Windows. Means the same thing. Don't run as an administrator. But it does, and it's unfortunate, cause some programs to have fits. And it shouldn't cause Microsoft programs to have fits. It really shouldn't. Because, I mean, come on, guys. Let's allow users to use your computers securely. Please, I beg of you. Heather's in Asheville, North Carolina. Hey, Heather, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks a lot for having this show. It's really important.
Thank you. I'm glad you like it. Thank you.
All right, so here's my problem. I'm a writer, and I want to write outside in the cafes here in Asheville using a 14-inch laptop that has a track point.
Sounds wonderful.
Well, it sounds wonderful, but it isn't, because I was always a Lenovo user. But in the last years, their track points are not working.
Ah, what's happening?
They're just not moving.
Well,
they're just not. The cursor is going all over the place, and so I checked always the reviews of other people who have bought the computers, and the reviews on the Lenovo's now are horrible.
Oh, that's sad.
People specifically use the track point. So then I went to a very brand new Dell. The machine looked wonderful. And after having the computer for 1 month, having them send a guy here to replace the keyboard once, twice, and three times, I sent that back. And it was a brand new one, and then I looked up a Toshiba Tektra, I believe it's called, and I'm afraid to buy it because there are no reviews on it yet. And I think something is happening. Maybe they're making them here in the USA, or maybe they're making them in Asia. All I know is I can't find a 14-inch laptop with a track point or something like that that works.
Well, they haven't made them in the USA in years. I guess Dell's made in the USA. The track point is a Lenovo, feature that's for many years been one of the things going back to the IBM ThinkPad days that made them distinctive.
Exactly, and they're wonderful. I cannot use the touchpad. I just can't work it. Tried the external.
I have to think it's software. I hate for you to buy another laptop. I have to think it's software.
Well, let me tell you, the Lenovo that I had went to Lenovo, it's traveled more than I have. It went to Texas. It went to Charlotte. It went locally. No one could fix it. And so after then reading the reviews, which were just incredible, there's one fellow who has 200 employees. And he said in his review that he has always bought Lenovos.
Right.
And he is never going to buy a Lenovo again because the TrackPoint doesn't work. And those are the reviews basically on the current Lenovos.
Well, now, were they cheap? Are they noticeably cheaper?
No, they're high-end computers.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, in Nashville, they don't have any high-end computers to try. So therefore, I'm forced to kind of buy a brand new one.
Right.
And the Dell looked great. I tried the sound. It was wonderful.
You've gone into the control panel and looked at all the different settings on the
tech. Yeah, and I had a tech guy that I pay come over and check it out. I mean, I spent a lot of money trying to buy a high-end, expensive laptop. And so there is a new one, and as I said, I think that I have to wait until the reviews come out because...
I would.
Yeah. But meanwhile, I want a computer. It's beautiful here. I want to be outside writing. So I want to know. I mean, have you been hearing that from other people? If you go on the...
This is the first I've heard, but it doesn't mean it's not happening. It's just I've even played with the ThinkPad Carbon X1, which I love.
Well, that's what I was going to buy. If you read the customer reviews, they specifically say if you use, even in this case, a trackpad or a TrackPoint, don't buy the X1 Carbon.
Wow. Well, see, I haven't had that experience. It worked fine for me.
And you use the TrackPoint on it?
Yeah, I'm not a TrackPoint fan, though, so I'm probably a bad person to judge because I find them difficult and finicky to control. I like the trackpad.
All right.
But I use the trackpad fine, and the TouchPoint seemed to work fine as far as I could tell.
Well,
it seems baffling, frankly.
Well,
I'm seeing people in the chat room who say, no, I use the TrackPoint and it's reliable. I mean, obviously, it's not 100% reliable. Enough people are having problems that they're getting reviews saying it doesn't work. I wouldn't say it's 100% of their machines aren't working. It sounds like some good proportion of them are. So I'm not sure what's going on.
Yeah. Because I just don't. I mean, I don't want to spend the money since the only way I can try the computer is to.
No, I don't blame you. And that this is something that's really changed in the industry. There's nowhere to try before you buy.
Exactly.
If you had a Microsoft store,
we don't have that here.
Yeah, that's and there very few people do. There's not even one in Manhattan.
Really? And I'm from Manhattan originally.
Yeah, you'd think there'd be one in Manhattan. There's one in New Jersey. There's not one in Manhattan. So, I'm baffled that you're having this problem.
Well, I'm more than baffled because I spent, and the Dell service was incredible. I called the guy I was dealing with, and he sent a local guy to bring up the keyboard, and the guy came, and he tried it. He said, it's not working. He came 2 days later with
another. Sounds like it's not working.
And then he came with a motherboard, and he said, I don't believe this. So, of course, they took it back. And I wanted some money for my time wasted. I think this was only legitimate. I asked Dell for some money for my time wasted by being a very good customer because I went along with this for over 6 weeks.
And how'd that work out for you?
Well, you know already. You're smiling. The fellow I was dealing with would have loved it. And then I spoke to some place in El Salvador.
Yeah,
they were as rude as can be, was as if it were a different company.
Yeah.
And I said to the guy suddenly while I was waiting for him to come back on the line, I said, you know what? I have been reading customer reviews for over a month for all kinds of computers. And I said, maybe I should publish the 80 emails between my Dell guy and myself.
Well, you know, I would. I mean, the thing is, the best thing anybody can do if you're having trouble is post, you know, make sure that these reviews go out because that's a valuable thing. And it's not just reviews from professional reviewers, but frankly, I think even more useful, the real world experiences of users is valuable.
I had known this was going to happen. I do write. I could have been more clever in my responses.
Yeah.
So it's kind of boring. I'm sending back the Dell, Chris. Thanks, Holly. Have a good day. They always say, have a good day.
Yeah, well, that's in their script.
But meanwhile, I don't have an answer to my problem. So you would recommend, which is what I was going to do, was wait for the new Toshiba Tekra. Do you know anything about
it? I'm not a fan of the Toshibas, to be honest.
The right,
problem
well,
is that the margins in the computer industry have plummeted. And because consumers have said, hey, we're not going to spend $2,000 on a computer anymore. So you're getting computers that cost half or even in many cases a quarter of what they used to cost. What gives? Well, the first thing that's gone is good support because that's very expensive. You have to pay for decent support.
Yes.
The second thing that goes away is quality control, quality assurance, and in fact, just using quality parts. You've bought, I presume, a higher end, all these companies make consumer and high end laptops. Always get the high end.
Well, those are the ones I get, and now they're not working.
That's really depressing.
Well, it's depressing.
Do you like a trackpad? Can you use a trackpad?
I tried it. I don't know what it is. I was trying to think the other day of when did I ever start on the track point, but I've been writing for years, and it could have been 20 years ago.
Yeah, you're used to it.
I'm used to it, and I did try. I did try the, since I have my crash computer, that's what I call the T420 S Lenovo. It crashes all the time, but now I know how to deal with it. And
well, this computer sounds haunted. It sounds like a terrible computer.
Well, it worked basically for 6 months, and then it was all over the USA. So I just really don't know what to do except wait for the reviews on the Toshiba. It's the only one left that has a track point that has decent reviews.
Well, I think you're going to have to. That's the problem, I think, is not that many people use track points anymore. It used to be all the rage. I never got used to it. I found them very difficult to control. But I understand you never take, it's perfect for somebody who writes a lot because you never take your hands off the home keys. Your fingers are right there. So it's a really good solution for people who want to type, a writer especially. But I've just got used to using trackpads. I kind of keep my fingers on the home keys, and I just use the thumb, and it seems to work all right. But obviously support's terrible for these companies. They're having problems with hardware. I think the best you can do is do what you're doing. Wait for the reviews. Make sure it works before you order one. Sorry to hear that. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. There she is, Heather Hammon, the phone ranger. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number to call if you want to get on the horn and talk high tech. I'd love to do it with you. Let's see who's next here. Stan in Bettsville, Ohio. Hi, Stan. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hello, Leo.
Hello, Stan.
It is so good to track you down. Several months ago, I found you again.
I don't know how you could lose me. I think I'm everywhere.
Well, I think it was my fault. It wasn't you.
Don't lose me again, please.
I don't plan to. From the days with you and that Ryan guy and that really cute brunette on Saturday mornings, I think it was.
Yeah.
I used to watch that show religiously.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you're listening now. That's good. What can I do for you?
You could sure steer me in the right direction, I'm sure. I live in a small village, but we have an old stone quarry that's been converted about 70 years ago into a park. Fresh water, real big stone quarry with a beach, picnic area, ball field.
Oh, that's
shot.
Great. That's nice.
Well, our small community now is, I'm on the village council, and I brought up the idea of Wi-Fi because we're going to now have camping available and that type of thing. I have no idea. I'm probably the most tech savvy of all of us on the village council, but I don't know where to start to dig into Wi-Fi and how we could set up a Wi-Fi system at our local park.
Well, this is great. So you're on the city council, the village council, and so this is a great thing. Now, a lot of times when municipalities do public Wi-Fi, they'll go to the local internet service provider or a company that provides internet service, and they'll contract with them. Usually they do it for free because they're going to put advertising or, you know, it's a way for them to gain goodwill, that kind of thing. So the first thing I'd check with is a local internet service. But this is not something probably the city wants to get into. How far out is the quarry from town?
It's only about a quarter of a mile on the outskirts.
That's not too bad. So there'll be different ways you could solve this. If it's line of sight to downtown, maybe they'll set up a microwave link. Google does a little bit of this. In fact, they've been doing more and more of it, Google Community Wi-Fi. I don't know if Google would be interested in helping you out there, but maybe they would. They've done they've done Wi-Fi access for a number of cities, including their own city. So if you go to wifi.google.com, you can maybe learn how to apply for that. But I think the first thing to do is to contact a local. Do you have a local internet service provider as opposed to a big national company that provides service in town?
The really only thing local is Time Warner Cable.
Yeah, and that ain't really local, is it?
No.
But you can try them. You can try them. Municipal Wi-Fi is, I think, a great thing, but companies like Comcast and Verizon, and I'm sure Time Warner too, see it as a competitive. They don't want they don't want municipalities to compete on their turf. So usually, they've gone state to state to get it to be illegal. In fact, it started in Philadelphia, Comcast's home turf, and the Comcast got the Pennsylvania state legislature to ban it. So because it's bad for their business, but it's good for the people. But that doesn't matter apparently. So. In my estimation, you're better off with somebody if they're local, like a company that just really serves your region. But if you can't find them, then maybe go to Time Warner. I'm sure that you have a deal with Time Warner. They're your your incumbent, you know, cable company. Every region makes a deal with a cable company, so there's probably a contract. If you're in luck, the Time Warner contract is about to run out soon. So you can make a deal. I served on the technology committee in our little town, and that was one of the things we talked a lot about, is how we could get Comcast to be a better citizen and live up to its agreements with the town. Because, frankly, there's no way to enforce it, so except to sue them. And no little town wants to sue a big company. So,
Okay.
You're looking for something called a WISP. A wireless internet service provider. And, it just really depends on what's out there. I think this is a great idea. In fact, to me, this is the solution to the net neutrality conundrum. We've talked a lot yesterday and we've been talking all week about the Federal Communications Commission kind of undermining the idea of a free and open internet by saying it's going to be okay for companies to charge for access to their customers. So, you know, you already pay your internet service provider, but the big companies also want to charge Google and YouTube and Netflix and everybody for access to their customers, a little extra. There's nothing wrong with a little extra on the side, except what it does is it means that small companies will be disadvantaged, that if you can't afford to pay the extra fee or somehow cooperate with these internet service providers, you are going to have very slow access. And that's bad, I think, for the future of the internet, for innovation. And we've been talking an awful lot about this. One of the solutions proposed by a friend named Dan Gilmore in his article about this in The Guardian, in the English newspaper, The Guardian. Dan's a local, you know, he's in the Bay Area, but he writes for The Guardian from time to time, is community internet access. Communities can provide internet access. They can use the right of eminent domain, for instance, to get access to cabling that's been put under the ground, or systems that are put in by the phone company or the cable companies to say, we're going to provide community access. This is a great solution. It provides competition, and of course, competition's how you keep the internet open and free. That's the best way to do it. So I think it's great, Stan, that you, as a village commissioner, you want to do this. You want to do this, and I encourage you to work on it. It's not, you know, you got to have to knock on some doors, talk to internet service providers. They are the ones who have the big fat pipe to the outside world. You need to help get them to cooperate with you to put a nice little pipe out there at that quarry, which sounds really lovely. A lot of cities have done this, though. I'm sure if you look around, you'll see a lot of people have done it. Wally, on the line from, is it Adrian, Michigan?
Yes.
Hi, Wally. What can I do for you?
It's Willie, actually.
Oh, Willie, Wally. Hi, Willie.
Hey. So I called you guys a little while back in around September, about some hard drives and stuff that were corrupting.
Uh-huh. Now you got an SD card corrupted?
Yeah, well, I found out there was some good news. Some of the drives turned out to be a hardware problem, and I was able to get the data back.
Excellent.
So, yeah,
excellent.
That is good news. The SD card that I have, it brings back the videos, but I can't play them. Some of them I can't play. And some of them work, some of them don't.
Yeah, so a video file is a complicated file, and if it's not complete, you can't just start in the middle and play the rest of it. So if it sounds like these are corrupted, they're damaged, maybe a lot of the data is there, but not all of the data. Maybe there's software that would rebuild it. I don't know, but I think what you really want to try to do is read every sector, get that whole file if you can.
Yeah, there was a software program that I used. It was it brought back. It was sort of restored the video, but there were points where it would just like have like a weird hiccup in the middle of it or something.
Yeah,
I mean, it wasn't like
it didn't get it all. In other words, it was most, but not all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I use, I don't know what I told you when you called in September. Maybe I told you about Recuva, R-E-C-U-V-A. It's a free file recovery program from Piriform. I think it's very good. Running that on it, and then open the files in VLC, which is free, the Video LAN client. You can get it at videolan.org.
VLC, I've tried that too.
It's the least vulnerable to file corruption. It'll move heaven and earth to try to play a file back.
Yeah.
If it can't play I don't think anything can. It's one of those things. So there's a couple of programs you can try for free. We'll put the links to that in the show notes at techguylabs.com. Nice to talk to you, Willie. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, anything with a chip in it. 888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number to call if you've got a question, a comment, a suggestion. Our website is techguylabs.com, and everything I mention, all the links and so forth, plus a lot more, are on the website there, including audio and video from the show after the fact. techguylabs.com. And you can comment. So if you, and it's all free, by the way. There's no, you don't have to pay to get in or anything like that. So if you hear me say something you disagree, go on the website. You'll see where the question is, the answer, and you can add your 2 cents worth, and you can even vote up and down other people's comments. So my hope is over time that it'll become a really valuable resource for people to go. You can search and find an answer to almost anything. We're getting there. 1,080 shows. Should be a lot of information on there. Eric is on the line from Los Angeles listening to the Mothership, the great KFI in L.A. Hi, Eric.
Hi, thank you for your time.
Thanks for calling.
I've got a compact Presario laptop, a CQ62. It's running slowly, and if I could tell you the few things I've done, and I think there's some programs on it that are hogging up my CPU, and it's just bogging down when I use a program like Final Draft or I go on YouTube. It just slows down, and sometimes on YouTube it'll freeze up, and you know that little circle spins, and it just doesn't. It's running real slow when I put any when I labor it.
First of all, how much RAM do you have in the thing?
Well, I just upgraded that. I went from the stock 2 gigs to 4.
All right, that's kind of the minimum these days, and you're running Windows
7.
7, good.
Yeah, and it was running really hot, and the fan was really laboring, and so I tore it apart the other night and cleaned out the heat sink. It had just good. So much crud built up, and it was like a pad of felt, you know?
Yeah, you got to do that every few years. It does. It literally becomes a blanket and means it'll overheat.
Yes.
In fact, my first book, the publisher didn't go for it, but we wanted to call it How Do I Get the Dog Hair Out of the Disk Drive? Because it sucked. You know, you have a fan that's sucking all the stuff in and then a fan that's blowing it out. It's basically a big filter system for your house. So everything that's in the house, dust, fur, feathers, whatever, is going to get sucked into that and eventually builds up. So you did the right thing there. But the same thing happens to the hard drive. How many years have you had this compact?
I bought it used from a friend that had it. I mean, it's 2011 or 12. It's fairly new.
When you bought it used, did you wipe the drive and start over, or did your friend do that?
I wish he did something, and I don't think he's that savvy. And I must disclose, I'm fairly ignorant on this as well. I can tear apart anything and fix it, but on the technical level, I'm a Luddite. So.
Hey, I know you're right in the next big Bruce Willis movie. I do not want this hardware to get in your way, my friend. You've got a screenplay to write. So
So
here's the deal. These things
really cool now.
Yeah, that's good. You fixed that part, but there's also cruft on the hard drive. There's bit rot on the hard drive because you don't put stuff on there. You take it off. You move it around. And after a while, all computers slow down with time, Windows computers particularly.
So is the right thing to do is wipe this thing out or get a new hard drive for it? Or
You don't need to get a new hard drive unless the hard drive's going bad. That happens more often than people realize, and it will initially manifest as a slower machine because what happens is the operating system is laboring to read the drive. The drive isn't, you know, immediately offering up its data. It's going, wait a minute, okay. And then the next sector, wait a minute, okay. And that'll really slow you down.
Is there some place I can access on the net that I can learn how to wipe this thing, or you know, I got an external drive by Seagate. I can pull whatever off on it.
Yeah, so it's very straightforward. The first thing is you need to find a copy of Windows 7.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably don't have one of those.
I don't.
You can buy it. Newegg sells it. eBay, you could find one. The key is make sure you're getting it from a legitimate source with a legitimate serial number, because you can buy a disk that's been used and you'll never be able to install it because somebody else has already used it. So, you know, make sure it's I get it from Newegg. You can get the OEM edition. That's fine. You don't need to get a full version. So all you'll do is you'll back up your data. You've got that at Seagate. That's marvelous. Make sure you've got a copy that's good on your Seagate. Make two copies for real peace of mind. And if it's a screenplay, you really don't want to take a chance. So make three copies. You know, really have and check them and make sure I can open it in Final Draft and everything. Everything looks good. Then you're going to put your Windows disk in and you're going to run the installer. And when it gets to the options, you're going to wipe off the hard drive. You go into options and erase the drive, start over. Even if the drive is a little bit flaky, this will help.
Okay.
Because it kind of starts fresh, rewrites all the data. Usually that makes a huge difference. If you want to spend a little money and make it a lot faster, I'm not sure it's a recent enough computer to do this. You could put a solid state drive in there. The problem is the drive may be faster than the computer can handle. So you wouldn't see any benefit. On a more modern computer, a solid-state drive would speed things up immensely. But I'm not sure on the vintage Presario that's a good idea. Let's just wipe it off, reinstall Windows. Almost always that fixes things considerably. If you still feel it's slow, then new hard drive might speed things up, yeah.
All right. Well, I thank you. I don't know the world like you do, so I apologize.
That's what I'm here for. You don't give me the business, I got nothing to do.
All right.
So I'm auditioning for your script, by the way, in case you need a guy that talks like that. The real thing to do is make sure you have a good backup, and not a backup means two copies, not one. So if you have an original, you back it up under that Seagate, and then you erase the original. You don't have a backup. You have one copy. So
right.
Make two copies. You know, if you're writing a novel or a screenplay, I'd print it out. I mean, I wouldn't take any chances at all, because you don't want to rewrite that thing.
Yeah, exactly. It was slowing down, and that's why I was fishing around for another computer just to get me by, and I bought the Seagate drive just to...
Good.
I said, I'm not
back
taking
it up.
Any chances. I'm getting
back
this
it up.
Off this.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. And, you know, the truth is, you want to run Final Draft, right? That's kind of the key for you.
Right.
Yeah, so you really need a Windows PC.
Yeah, and it is just unbelievably slow when you put it on a program like YouTube or Final Draft. All of a sudden, it's running at first gear. And
yeah, it may really just be too old. It really could be that you have enough RAM, but it could be a slow hard drive. Or it could be other problems.
Hard drives are about $40.
They're cheap.
250 gigs.
Yeah, they're cheap, but it may not make it faster. I want you to rebuild it first and see.
All right.
But I got to tell you, I Steve Martin once told me he was writing The Three Amigos, great movie. And he was using a word processor that was so slow, because he was a geek early on. It was so slow, I think it was Electric Pencil. He would move a paragraph, you know, move a block of text. And because it took so long to move it, he had to get up and get a cup of coffee.
Wow.
So I know it feels slow, but if Steve Martin could write The Three Amigos on an electric pencil computer and get up and get a cup of coffee just to move a block of text, you know, maybe it helped. I don't know.
I thank you.
All right. Have a great one. Take care. Then Steve won't give me a role in movies either. Three Amigos. 80... Isn't everybody in L.A. just wants to be an actor or a screenwriter? Pretty much that's the story right there. 8888, Ask Leo. Computers get slow for a variety of reasons. More often than we imagine, it is the hard drive just getting a little flaky, a little unresponsive. And the computer won't give up. The computer's persistent. It'll keep saying, give me that data. Give me that. I'm going. I'm getting the data. Give me the data. I'm getting it. Be patient. And it takes a while. And the thing is, that's one sector. You know, it's like five words. Now you got to do it all again. So if the hard drive is failing but not dead, it can be very slow. So a new hard drive may just do it all. The thing is, with a new hard drive, you're also going to reinstall Windows. You're going to take off any extra stuff you've got on there. You're going to strip it down. It's going to be simple. Clean. Kind of like the way it was when it came from the factory. If I buy a used computer, that's the first thing I do. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number. Mike is in Glendale, California. Our next caller. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo. How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks. I love the show.
Thank you.
Listen, I wanted to ask a question because I asked somebody and he told me that this was, that I could not remove it permanently, but I put a novel on my hard drive on my new computer, and now I might have to send it back, you know, to get a new one because it's kind of goofy. Is there a way I can remove that novel permanently? Like, no tech expert at the company can unearth it.
Yeah, you don't want them to take your precious prose and sell it to the highest bidder.
That's exactly my thought.
Somebody will claim they wrote it. So here's the deal. Yeah, first of all, make sure you got a copy or two.
Right.
Just like the last guy with his script. One copy of nothing, of something, it could be on a drive that says backup, is not a backup. You have to have multiple copies. And if you really care, you should print one out.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Having said that, you know, warning, do not erase until you've made a copy. Once you've made a copy, then there's a free program. It's a Windows machine, right?
No, it's a Mac.
It's a Mac. Okay. Easier than that, then. They have a secure erase feature on the Macintosh. So. There's a program. What you'll do is you'll take the boot disk. Actually, they don't have boot disks anymore. They make it a little harder, but you can do it. You're gonna reboot the machine, holding down the R. I think it is. Let me make sure. Because what you're gonna do is go into recovery mode, and when you do that, you can launch a program called Disk Utility.
Right.
And Disk Utility has a secure erase feature. You'll see a box that says secure erase. That takes a lot longer, but what it's doing is it's writing data zeros onto the drive, then erasing them, then writing ones onto the drive, then erasing them. It does it a couple of passes. That means nobody, even the gurus at Dell or whoever you go, or Apple, can read that. Your novel is safe.
Okay.
So what you're going to do is restart, press Command and R on your as it's booting up, and it'll go into that. It'll look like it's an install mode. And they'll be under the menu, under the utility menu, there'll be a Disk Utility. Just run that and secure erase, and you're golden.
Okay.
All right.
Command-R.
Command-R during reboot.
During reboot. Okay, there you go. Yep. And then Disk Utility, secure erase.
Yeah. Apple actually comes with the utility to do that. Now, if you're on a Windows machine, there's a free program, Derek's Boot and Nuke. We could just Google DBAN and you'll find it. But it's nice that Apple provides that.
Yeah. Hey, you want to know why I might have to send my computer back?
What's wrong with it?
This is so weird, and I can't believe it. When we were setting it up, me and a buddy, it would not take my password. It kept saying, this is an invalid password, even though it was being entered correctly. And this would happen over and over and over.
And the Apple guy said, oh, yeah, we know. Send it back. We'll fix it.
No, they didn't say that yet.
That's very weird. I've never heard of that at all.
Yeah. And then it took 3 days to get it set up, and I eventually had to use tech support to do it, Apple tech support.
And they walked you through it, and you were able to get a password entered.
Yeah. And now 2 weeks later, it did it again.
What did they do to get it to work?
That's a good question.
You don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, well, we went through a whole bunch of things where we shared the screen. She came onto my screen and would point, okay, do this.
And did she say, oh, yeah, the same thing's happening?
No.
Huh. That's interesting.
Yeah.
You're near enough an Apple store that's another option for you.
Right.
Go to the Apple store
and
make an appointment with a genius, and then you go and you sit down and say, okay, now you do it. Because if they see it, they'll go, oh. And you know what? They should know about it. Maybe there's something weird going on. You know, I never poo-poo this stuff because the computer software can go crazy in all sorts of weird ways. In fact, I recently bought the new Mac Pro, you know, that black cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
And but it was acting strange. It would reboot every once in a while. So all of a sudden, the keyboard would stop working. And, you know, the presumption, I think, with tech support people, me too, is, you're doing something wrong. And so they would walk me through stuff, and that'd still be happening. But the good news about Apple, and this is one of the reasons you pay a little more for a Mac, frankly.
Right.
they'll stand by their stuff. So eventually they sent me a new one. And you know what's great? It hasn't had any problems, and I love it. And I just had a bad one. That happens.
Yeah. Well, it's good to know that I can remove my novel permanently.
And, yes.
And, if that does happen to be the case.
Yeah. And Apple has a what they call a secure erase, which will overwrite everything, and it should be all right.
All right.
Well, all right. Hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. But do bring it. You know, before you send it back, back up before you bring it in, by the way. Always very important advice. Because if they say, oh, you know what? There is something wrong. I'm taking the computer. We're going to do what we call a capture. And we're going to put it in the back and give you a brand new one. You'll go, but wait. That's my novel's on that. Sometimes they'll let you have it back. But it's best to, if I were you, make a copy of it. Before you bring it into the Apple store, maybe even erase the original. Apple, you can even drag it into the trash and secure erase it on a Macintosh. So if you look at the Finder menu, under the word Finder, it says secure empty trash. That's the same thing. So you could just take the, if you just wanted to erase the novel and nothing else, drag the knob, make a backup first, drag the novel into a trash, and then go to the Finder menu. Select secure empty trash, and that will do the same thing. Overwrite it and unwrite it, overwrite it and unwrite it. Good luck, Mike, and good luck with the novel. We had a screenwriter and a novelist. What could possibly be next? Is somebody going to sing to us? I hope so. Elwood, Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Elwood. Are you in the Blues Brothers? Hello, Elwood. Sounds like he's playing the harmonica very quietly. In the background. Elwood! Hey! What do you want for nothing? Rub a biscuit? Zach in Los Angeles. Hi, Zach. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo.
Hey, Zach.
I called you maybe a few months ago, and I need you as a first and a third opinion.
you have one in the middle?
Yes, I do. Okay. I have a tech helper who I'm sort of checking up on. Not as good as the first tech helper I had who didn't have a day job. This one has a day job, so I get a little
That I can very well give you a third opinion.
Yeah. Well, I got me a new Dell with the Windows 8.1 with a non-touch screen, and I still think it will be looked at as the 8-track tapes of computers someday. But,
or the Windows Vista of computers someday.
Yeah, something like that. The my problem with it is my first tech helper, and you backed him up on with ESET Nod as an antivirus. ESET
Nod 32, it's an antivirus. They're a sponsor, right. But it's a very good antivirus. Yeah,
I got that. It's on my older computer, which is a Windows 7. It's sitting right behind the new one.
Okay.
I have both on simultaneously.
Okay.
I cannot seem to move the ESET Nod from the old computer to the new computer, but I'm not exactly sure when I bought it. It might need to be repurchased.
Yeah, normally you can log out of the Nod 32 on one computer and install it on another. This might be a call for ESET. I'm afraid I don't have know the exact details for how to do that. But moving an antivirus can be a little more tricky because they're designed not to be uninstalled, right? You don't want malware to uninstall it. So I would suggest a visit to the ESET site, ESET.com, and their tech notes for some more help. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo. I think we got Elwood back. Let's try again, shall we? Elwood in Los Angeles. Can you hear me now, Elwood?
I hear you, but can you hear me?
I can hear you. You can hear me. We can now have a conversation.
Okay, because I called earlier and it got hanged up. Here's the thing. I got this cell phone. It's the ZTE998.
Yes.
And when I'm on the Wi-Fi trying to listen to your live broadcast,
yes,
I cannot get that, but I can get it on my laptop. So what's the problem with my...
What are you doing to listen to the live broadcast on the phone? What program are you using?
I just type in www.quick.tv.
Do this instead. You'll like it better. It's an Android device, which means you can put a program that I like a lot. Actually, there's several programs. I'll give a plug to the one that comes from the company that does this show because they deserve the first plug. That's called iHeartRadio.
And we're on that. But you can also download TuneIn Internet Radio. That is a program a lot of people use to listen to live radio on the Internet. And if you search for TWIT, which is the name of the network, on there, you'll be able to hear our live stream. So it's a little different from the radio stream. The radio stream is the radio show. That's what they have on iHeartRadio. The stream you'll get on TuneIn Internet Radio is just a live stream, so you hear what's going on in the studio. You hear me laughing maniacally, passing out, falling asleep, that kind of thing. So that's two ways you can listen that are better than using the website. The website's probably not the best way to listen. We even have a TWIT app. You know, so I understand people say, well, wait a minute, is this the Tech Guy Radio Show? Yes, it is. But we do it out of our TWIT studios. TWIT is the network that I do shows on all week long. So it's the Tech Guy plus a dozen other shows. And you can hear all of those. There are TWIT apps as well. So if you search for TWIT in the Google Play Store, you'll see a number of different apps. FCON makes a very good one. And you can listen on that as well. So there's really a lot of ways to listen. But none of them are the website. The website is sometimes because probably it's an older Android version, it may not support the features it needs to play.
So what you just told me is, am I going to be using airtime?
Yeah, you would for no matter what you're using airtime. You're not minutes, data.
Yeah, well, see, right now I'm using airtime because I'm using the cell phone, but I'm trying to use the Wi-Fi part of it.
Well, no, you won't. If you're on Wi-Fi, you won't use it, but you have to be within reach of a Wi-Fi access spot. Yeah, you're only using data if you're not on Wi-Fi.
Right.
But no matter what app, whether it's the web, the TWIT app, the TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, that only uses data minutes on your cell plan if you are not within if you're not logged into a Wi-Fi access point.
Right. So the programs you just mentioned,
all of them are just like the browser. They're all the same. They'll use data from Wi-Fi if it's available, otherwise from your cell phone.
Okay. So would that be in the show note? Because I didn't.
It will indeed. James DeRuvo is right as we speak. I can see his little bearded elf-like self typing this in. It'll be up on the website, Tech Guy Labs, within seconds of the completion of our phone call. Okay, Elwood?
Yes. Okay.
Nice to talk to you, and I'm glad radio is easy. You got a radio, you tune it in, you know what the frequency is. I guess it's not that easy. We're just used to it, right? Oh, I know what frequency. You have to know what frequency is. And you tune it in, and there it is. And, you know, you pull out the button, and you push it back in again. Now we're programmed. We're just used to it. It isn't actually that easy to tune in and listen, but we know how to do that. The problem is now, you know, you got to use the internet. So it's a whole new way. And I wish it were easier. I wish it were as easy as pushing a button and pulling up the radio show. You know, if you're not listening on the radio, you can listen on the internet. You just have to either have an app or you could use your browser, but it's not. It's on mobile devices. The browsers are not usually as quite as capable. Glad you're trying though, Elwood. I'm glad you're making the effort because we need every listener we can get. Like Eileen in Wilmington, Delaware. Hi, Eileen. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Actually, I have a son who has he has a lot of issues, but two in particular is OCD. He has obsessive compulsive disorder and high anxiety. Yeah. And for his birthday, which is coming up in a couple of weeks, I was thinking of buying him a cell phone. But he's not that much concerned about making phone calls because he has a friend that has a telephone that he can use. Uh-huh. He's more interested in Google and looking up Wikipedia because he's into tennis quite a bit.
How old is he?
He's going to be 38.
I think a tablet might be more useful if he's not going to be making phone calls. A tablet might be more of the thing.
Is that right?
Oh, my goodness. And a lot of people, you know, tablets with autistic kids, amazing results. Absolutely.
Really?
You know, and I understand, look, I have kids with issues, too. I understand that you have to introduce it carefully and, you know, you don't know exactly what the reaction is going to be. But an iPad or my choices would be a Nexus 7, which is, this is the Google device. It's $225. It's not expensive. And it's really good. Does he have internet access where he is?
No, you can't have internet access. The man says no, because the workers will be on it all the time.
Ah, so that's why. So it needs to have it needs to have cellular access built into the device.
That's right.
Okay, so you
can't. I didn't really want a contract. I didn't want to.
Well, that's the problem. If you're going to get a device with LTE, you have to pay a contract. There's really no way around that. So you got to pay for the internet access.
What do you recommend then?
Well, again, the Nexus 7, but just make sure you get the one that's LTE compatible.
LTE.
Okay. And then you can go through T-Mobile, and they have very affordable data plans. It might be cheaper to go to a phone company, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, or Sprint, figure out which one's best where your son is. And go there because they'll subsidize the tablet. All of them sell tablets with internet access. See, if he doesn't have Wi-Fi, he's not going to be able to look up anything unless he has internet access included.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. You need to pay for the internet, too. And either you have to use the Wi-Fi that's where he lives or where he works, or if they won't let him, then he's going to have internet access built into that device. And that means a $30 a month contract fee.
I see. Well, that's reasonable. But
yeah,
I don't
it's not hugely expensive.
No. I didn't know he had a... I don't think he has a Wi-Fi. Sure.
Yeah, he probably does. And make sure that they allow him to use... You know, if they don't want him to use Wi-Fi, they may not want him to use a phone with or a tablet with internet access, too. That might be another issue.
Yeah, he said he doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to have the hookup for that.
So you got to check. You got to check and make sure that that's okay. Because a lot of places they want, it's too bad.
What do I get then in that?
Well, you don't have a choice. If they don't allow internet, then you're out of luck.
Mm-hmm.
Because he can't watch you can't surf the net or look at tennis scores or anything without internet access. Is he in a home or is he?
Yeah, it's in a group home.
Group home. And does the group home doesn't allow internet?
That's right. Because he said that he's fearful that the workers will be on it all day. They'll be so distracted. They'll just.
That's
so
sad.
Very sad.
Because that means that the clients can't use the internet, and they deserve to be able to use the internet, right?
That's right.
This is his personal internet when it's built into the tablet like that. I don't think they're going to have a problem. You should contact the group home and make sure you don't want to waste your money. But I think that's a good solution. The workers can't use it either. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Last segment of today's show. 8888 Ask Leo. Back to the phones we go. Tori in Floyd, Virginia. Hi, Tori. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's going well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I've actually been a fan since ZTV before it merged into tech TV with Screensavers.
Well, thank you for watching all this time.
Yeah. I actually had a question. I've been programming since I was about 8 or 9 in BASIC and QBASIC. And a lot
QBASIC.
Of
QBASIC. Oh, there's a blast from the past. Is it still around?
Yeah, well, I don't want to use it now, but a lot of those.
You know, by the way, this is the 40th anniversary this week of the invention of BASIC.
I didn't realize.
By Kameny and Kurtz. Yeah, they wanted to write a programming language that would be easy for beginners to use. That's what BASIC stands for, Beginners All-Purpose Symbolic Instruction Code. Well, that's attractive. And it was based on Fortran, but easier to use.
Yeah, and the QBASIC basically removed the number lines. But, I have a lot of 5 1/4 floppy disks that have all of my original programs on them. And I haven't been able to find a USB drive that had, a 5 1/4 USB drive that would allow me to connect to.
Got to go to eBay. I think it'd be the only place you can buy a USB floppy disk drive.
Okay.
I wonder if Newegg, that's a really good question. You want to get it off those floppies now. Because it's not going to get any easier.
I found a lot of 3 1/4 or 3.5-inch floppy disk USB drives, but I wasn't.
Oh, wait a minute. What size? Are these 5.5-inch disks?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, Newegg has for $20, for instance, has 3 1/4-inch or 3.5-inch drives, but the 5 1/4s, those are the old floppy disk drives.
Yeah, the actual literally floppy disks.
They really were. Oh, my goodness.
And I haven't been able to find a USB drive for those to kind of preserve, you know, a lot of my original programs and coding for that. So that's, you know.
Yeah, let's get them off now. Well, I'm just looking on eBay, and they do sell some. But, okay. You know, this is going to be a bit of a project for you because they probably, having a USB interface, they probably have a serial interface that you need to then perhaps make an interface or buy an interface for. There are plenty of floppy drives still on sale on eBay. Yeah. Chat room, maybe you can find us somebody that makes a 5 1/4 inch floppy drive with a USB interface.
I'm pretty tech savvy. I mean, I think
doesn't have to be beautiful because
XP and Windows 7 and 8 machines as well. So, you know, it doesn't matter what OS is, as long as, you know, I can connect it and, you know, preserve it.
Yeah, I think it's a good project. I think you could probably do it. I'm just going to see if anybody can find me. DX.com apparently might have something for sale there. Ed seems to have found something. Our chat room is so good at that. I'm going to let them do a little Googling for me. Oh, yeah, look at this. Deal Extreme. I see floppy drives, but it looks like they're mostly, as we thought, the 3 1/2 inch floppy drives. The new, you know, the rigid floppy drives. We want the old flexi drives. Really, they were floppy. Yeah, well, nope, Ed's got it. DX.com. I'll tell you what, we'll put a link to this in the chat room. It's $15.99. No, that's the wrong one, Ed. Nope. That's a 3 1/2 inch disc. This is actually a fascinating problem because, of course, you go, well, I'm just going to put everything, I'm going to digitize everything, my music, my photos, my documents. They'll live forever on that hard drive. But the problem is, as look what happened to the floppy. Look at zip disks. Look at Orb, Bernoulli drives. The problem is that you got two problems. One, you got to get a hardware that can read it. And then two, you got to get an operating system that can understand the bits it's getting. It's actually not that trivial. If somebody will put any links that we find that are good for the big... And yes, your 8-inch floppies, forget about. Those are the originals. That's why they're called floppies. They were really wobbly. If anybody can find a USB interface 5 1/4 inch drive, put it in the show notes, will you? Or just put it in the chat room. We'll get it in the show notes for you. And good luck. I have a bunch of source code for stuff I wrote, but I think it's on 3 1/2 inch discs. So I think I'll probably be all right for a few years. Don't waste too much time. The floppy is, I think, officially dead. Wynn in Wisconsin. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Wynn.
Yeah, hello to you, and thank you very much for taking my call. I've got so many nuggets from you just listening to you, and this is the first time I'm calling, and it's because I'm up a creek, so to speak.
Uh-oh.
I got a new computer, and it came with Windows 7, and they don't provide, restorable disks. It's what they have. It's behind the partition, the operating system.
Yeah, usually, though, when you get that, there'll be a utility that will allow you to make bootable disks.
Okay.
So look for that utility. Who made the computer?
IBM.
IBM did not make that computer.
Lenovo.
Yeah, okay. That's different. I think IBM's been out of the personal computer business for a little while.
Yes.
Yeah, Lenovo bought IBM's business. So I'm not sure how Lenovo does it, but I'm pretty sure that they will have a utility that says, make your recovery disks. And that's everybody. When you get a new computer, don't ignore that. Do it. It's a terrible idea, by the way, because what if you only get one shot at it? It's all because Microsoft is so afraid of piracy that they think, well, he's going to make 100 of them and sell them. No, you're not. And you can also call Lenovo, and for a nominal fee, they'll send you disks if the worst comes to worse. But I would make those disks now.
So this is the question then. Do I make that utility before I hook up to the internet so that there's no chance of corrupting it?
Ah, that's a very good question. There is a theoretical chance of it getting corrupted if you were to, you know, walk around the internet and somehow get infected, and if that infection were smart enough to try to infect the hidden partition. And, you know, in theory it could. I think it's unlikely. If I were you, I'd make them sooner than later, yes. But if you've already been on the internet, it's not the end of the world.
No, I haven't. Even though it's out of the box, it hasn't been connected. And the other question, which also goes with this behind the partition, they included some, you know, Microsoft Office, even though I didn't want it, but I had to. If I want it, I have to pay.
Yeah, it's a trial version. Yeah.
No. It's not even that. Because you have to pay for it, get the key, and then it unlocks it. So I don't want to have anything to do with it.
It's a trial version you can't even try. Nice.
Right. So
thoughtful.
Is there a way of removing it with behind the partition? Just because I'm told, I read somewhere that having that slows down the amount of RAM that you can use.
No, it doesn't. It's not running. It's just a file on there. It certainly you can remove it from your running partition. Removing stuff from the hidden partition, I wouldn't recommend. That's a little risky. You probably can see the hidden partition if you unhide it. Then you can look for that file. It's probably a single file that you could delete, but I'd be a little nervous about messing with that. It's not in your memory. It's just taking up a little bit of hard drive space. I'd say let's leave it there because I don't want to break anything. But don't, and you needn't worry about it. Until you activate it, it's completely harmless and not doing anything except wasting space. Thank you, Lenovo.
And the third and final question is, you know, I'm at the process of renewing my internet connection, and they change the packages for a person who is somewhat of a Luddite on the internet. Meaning, I watch YouTube and watch news, but no heavy big time downloads. What would be an acceptable speed?
If you want to watch YouTube videos, you really want to get something that's a minimum of 5 megabits downstream. Not that those YouTube videos are going to use that up, but the problem is the speed they quote you is always as fast as top speed, right? The nominal speed, and you never get that.
Yeah, it's about 80% or 70%.
Yeah, and if you start doing something else, that's going to reduce it. So a YouTube video should look fine with a megabit, but I would say look for... And I think that this should be available to you in most cases. 5 megabits down, 1 megabit up.
5 down, 1 up. Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of the minimum I would accept as a norm. You know, if you're really not doing anything but email, you can get away with less. But if you want to watch video, yeah, I'd get 5.1.
Or even watch live broadcast.
Yeah, or watch me. Yeah, 5.1. Yeah. Hey, Wynn, great to talk to you.
Figure it all out, I will.
Please do. Live.twit.tv. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.